the Law Hour and editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on taxes when we come back. You know, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep 41% of what you create and produce. Government gets 59%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard, produce twice as much, and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net 24%, and the government's going to net 76%. Which means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more, or 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. You produce 100% more and net 8% of it. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners, and that's where you're at $100,000 a year. Top 5% of income earners, and then you only net 24% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we're paying so much and receiving so little. And let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, now available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. If you prefer, you could order the free General Law CD package through our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that phone number, 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. And remember, my Tax and Status School is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. Do it right now before you forget. Taxes. Everybody's familiar with taxes. Everybody hates them, but everybody's very familiar with them. They're a part and parcel of everyday life. And you know, it isn't over on April the 15th. If you stop, for example, for a $10 pizza on Thursday night to celebrate being done with the IRS for another year, the tax man will be right there in the pizza parlor to grab a slice or two of your pizza. On top of paying the sales tax on that pizza, you're also picking up a major chunk of what the government charges the pizza parlor owner for the local property taxes, unemployment insurance taxes, federal payroll taxes, federal and state and local income taxes, and workers' compensation taxes. Altogether, according to a study by the Americans for Tax Reform, that comes to $3.80 on a $10 pizza for the omnipresent tax man. Now think of that. $10 pizza, $3.80 of that pizza is taxes. That's called a hidden tax. The sales tax on top of that $3.80 here in Missouri is 7%, so they're going to charge you about 25% or 25 cents, 25% of that 38-cent tax. That's a tax on a tax. Think about that. Now, if you pick up a Bud six-pack to go with the pizza, that's another 43 cents of each beer dollar that goes straight to the tax man for excise taxes, income taxes, property taxes, etc. If you want something a little stronger, let's say Jack Daniels, the tax man's share is $7.20 on average out of every $10. If you want to go a little lighter and just drink a Pepsi, that's 35% of what you pay for that six-pack of Pepsi. Goes for taxes at all levels. Then add a pack of Marlboros. That's 75% of the retail price now. 75% of the retail price on that package of Marlboro cigarettes is funneled directly into the state's coffers. And get home and then hit the light switch, and another $26 out of every $100 that you pay on your electric bill goes to government rather than for electricity. Now think about that. These are the hidden taxes that are added into your bill for electricity, beer, cigarettes, pizza. In fact, everything that we buy. Now, there isn't anything that we buy that you're not paying a tax on. Sometimes it's direct, like the sales tax. And sometimes it's indirect, like the price of a McDonald's hamburger, which is 5 cents. You're paying 5 cents for a McDonald's hamburger and $1.34 in taxes. And so when the price is $1.39, you're paying most of it in tax that you didn't know about. It's called hidden tax, the hidden tax. Now, let's suppose that you're flying the next day and the tax man is up early and waiting at the airport, pocketing 40%, $40 on every $100 airline ticket. And he's there in the hotel lobby when you land, snatching $43 on every $100 of your hotel bill. Now, let's go out to dinner and we pay another 28%. That's $28 out of every $100 of the restaurant bill ends up with the government rather than with the restaurant, the farmers, the truckers, and everyone else who worked together to produce your meal that you're eating for dinner. Now, at each and every stop, in items large and small, the greedy hand of government has its sticky fingers in every pocket. With bread, a recent study by the Price Waterhouse Company shows that 30 different taxes are imposed on the production and sale of a loaf of bread. And that accounts for 27% of the average retail price of bread. So you go into the store and you buy a $2 loaf of bread, and 54 cents of that loaf of bread goes to taxes. Buy some new tires for your car. And the study shows that the total taxes reach 45% of the price that you're paying. Here's another one. On the price of a new car, an Americans for Tax Reform study shows that the total taxes reach 36% of the showroom sticker price. Add some gas, and 54% of what you pay for the fill-up goes for 43 different federal, state, and local taxes rather than the oil producer and retailer. Now, you know, you look on the pump, and it says that your federal gasoline tax is X number. And they'll tell you, well, the state tax is a different number. And those two taxes in Hawaii add up to 54 cents a gallon. In our state here, it adds up to 46 cents a gallon, the federal and state tax. Hang on, troops. When the price of gas is $3 a gallon, you're not paying 50 cents a gallon in taxes. You're paying $1.50 a gallon for taxes. The two taxes they're telling you about, the federal and state highway taxes, are posted on the pump. The other dollar worth of taxes that's priced into that $3 gallon of gasoline, the government doesn't tell you about that. Now, there are 257 hidden taxes on a McDonald's hamburger. In 1930, before we got off on this tax kick, tax and spend kick, you know, with the New Deal and the Fair Deal and the second and the fifth and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto, a hamburger cost a nickel. And there was little or no tax on it. Today, the hamburger costs $1.39. The hamburger's still a nickel, but the other $1.34 is in taxes. And then you wonder why the cost of living is so high. Well, government is taking most of it in tax. Government gets paid more in tax on a gallon of gasoline than the Arabs, Exxon, the refinery, the shipping company that brought the oil from Saudi Arabia to Louisiana, the barge company that barged it up the Mississippi River, the trucking company that trucked it from the barge to the wholesaler, the wholesaler who trucked it from the wholesale tank to your 7-Eleven store, and the 7-Eleven store that stocked it and sold it to you. And what did the government do to produce that gallon of gas? To transport that gallon of gas? To refine the gallon of gas? Or to deliver the gallon of gas? What did the government do for their buck and a half that the other six or eight people in the chain that delivered these goods to you and actually performed the work? The people that actually produce the work and deliver the goods get paid less than the government that doesn't do anything. Nothing. Zero. Now, at the start of this nation's unique experiment with individual sovereignty and limited government, taxation without representation was called tyranny. It was the watchword of the American Revolution. For our founding fathers, a level of taxation of only a few cents on a dollar, siphoned off to a faraway and arrogant bureaucracy in England, was enough to ignite a revolution. Enough to grab the trusty musket off the wall. Today, in contrast, if we dare to startle the more panicky among us by buying a good rabbit gun, the government is there at the cash register to check our papers, and then sees $46 on every $100 that we spend for that gun. Now, all of this, of course, this immense pile of hidden taxation is stacked on top of our local property taxes and our local state and federal income taxes. And the way out? Not so easy. Act up and phone an IRS bureaucrat in Washington about our out-of-control government, and the tax man grabs another dollar on every $2 telephone call. 50% of every dollar that you spend on your telephone goes to government in tax. Now, if that's not enough, let's go out and get drunk. That's another $43 or $72, depending upon whether you're drinking beer or whiskey, out of every $100 that gets shipped off to the state, depending on whether you're drinking Coors or Wild Turkey. And for the average family, all of these taxes now eat up 38% of your gross income. That's a higher rate of taxation than ever before in the peacetime history of the United States. And by comparison, the typical two-income family in the mid-1950s paid 28% of their income for taxes. We are now at the absurd point where the typical family works until noon of every working day to satisfy the tax man, paying more in taxes than they spend for food, clothing, and housing combined. Now you're sitting there saying, well, they made $13,000 last year and I don't pay any income tax. Well, that's too bad for you, partner, because if you were paying income tax, you'd be paying less taxes than the poorest. You see, the poorest people among us pay the highest percentage of their income in taxes. The guy that's making $1 million a year doesn't pay 50% of the $1 million in taxes. He pays about a quarter, around 25%, $250,000. The guy that makes $13,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year. I mean, this guy's on minimum wage. Just see how much that is, just for the funds of it here. $5.15 times 2,000 hours a year. That's how much money? $10,300 a year. You're making $10,000 a year, partner. And you're paying 50% of that $5,000 in taxes. You got that? And then the more you make, the less the percentage is that you pay in tax. The more you make, the less. And in some cases, when you're making $100,000, I'm talking about a guy making $1 million, that's what we call the top 1%. If you're in the top 5% of income earners, you're out around $100,000 a year, you're paying about 74% in tax. It depends, of course, upon what you're buying and what you're not buying. But if you're paying all the taxes, it's 74%. And if you're a little guy down here making $10,300, the reason that you're on welfare, partner, is because there isn't enough left over for you to live on. Now, you could live on $10,300 if you had the $10,300, partner, but you don't have it. You buy a gallon of gasoline, $1.50 of it's tax. And the gasoline costs the same amount for the guy that makes $1 million a year as for the guy that makes $10,300 a year. The gallon of gas that you're buying at $3 a gallon costs $1.50 tax and $1.50 for the gas. And the guy making $10,000 a year pays $1.50 in tax to the government. And the guy that makes $1 million a year, he pays $1.50 tax to the government. Now think about that for a second. That's why the Democrats are so up in arms about this whole concept of minimum wage. And they've got a good point. They got a good point. I don't deny that. Now, what do you do to equalize that? You know, what's the magic formula or solution for that? Well, stick around. We'll talk about that. For the average family, all of these taxes eat up 38% of your gross income. Average family. Now, today with 480 different tax forms. Now, write that number down. 480 different tax forms. Means that you've got 480 different taxes. 480 different taxes. Now you're sitting there saying, well, I don't care about that. That don't bother me none. Remember that gun that you bought? And then the government took 46 cents. And you go and you buy a gun. Let's go into Walmart and let's buy a gun for $300. And out of the $300, the government takes $46 times 3, $138. $138 out of that $300 gun now goes to government. You pay the $138 not on the direct cost. You don't get a receipt that says sales tax. And that's in addition to the $300. If you're here in Missouri, we pay about a 7% sales tax. You pay $21 in sales tax. And that's on your receipt. The other $138 isn't on the receipt. And that's because the Winchester Company has labor costs to pay. And the Winchester Company, when they're writing out their payroll checks every week, they've got to pay Social Security on their employees and workman's compensation and Medicare costs and so on. And they add that into the price of the product. Then they ship that gun off to a wholesaler someplace, and he's got employees in the warehouse. The trucking company that hauled it, they've got employees, and they're paying those taxes. And everybody that touches that gun is adding on to their costs, and they're putting that into their price. And so pretty soon that gun ends up in a Walmart store, and Walmart paid $150 for it, and they're going to sell it to you for $300 because they'll keystone that markup. Not on guns. Guns have a pretty low markup. I shouldn't use a gun, I guess, as an example of that. But generally speaking, a store is going to keystone their markup, and they're going to charge you double, so... And they're going to add in their employees, and they're going to add in their costs and you know, the electricity and so on. And did you see that electricity bill up there? Well, the cost of electricity, 28 out of every $100 tab now. Know what that was? See if I've got this one here. Restaurant, each and every day, 36 out of that goes to tax man, 27% of bread. Seems to me it was about $43 on the hotel bill, $40 in the airline ticket. Dinner was $28. Let me get down here a little bit lower and see where that electricity was. What was that? Let's see, Muscadet, in contrast to a dare not more than the telephone is $46. Huh? No, it was $50. Dollar out of every $2 goes to the government on the telephone. Well, I can't see the electric here, but it was about, I don't know, 30% or so. 30%. That's on your electric bill. So every time you flip on the lights over here, every time you use the telephone, the government is there taking their cut. It not only adds to inflation, but it deteriorates. It takes away from you your ability to live your life, pay your bills, and get along in life. That's the bottom line. Today, with 480 different tax forms, 17,000 pages of laws and regulations, and then a federal tax code that's over 7 million words. That's right, your federal tax code. That's not your state, not your county, not your city, just the federal. 7 million words. Do you know how many words there are in the Bible? 773,000 words. That's right. In both the Old and the New Testament, God had an entire message for mankind, did it in 773,000 words. And out of the 773,000 words, when you get down to taxation, I bet you there isn't 1,000 words in all three tithes and all the holy day offerings and all the monetary laws of the Bible. Probably ain't 1,000 words. And listen, God can run the entire universe on less words than the government can run just in the tax code. 60% of Americans are paying a professional now, look, H&R Block, to help them negotiate this tax maze. Do you get that? 60% have to hire somebody to help them do their taxes. And every year, the IRS sends out 8 billion pages of forms and instructions, enough paper to stretch 28 times around the earth, to conform with this federal Rube Goldberg tax code. And Americans are spending 5.4 billion hours and more than $200 billion a year just in compliance costs, not counting the taxes themselves. Just to comply with that tax code, we pay $200 billion a year to H&R Block and others, your bookkeepers and accountants. And, not counting the taxes paid, more time and money than it takes to produce every car, truck, and van every year in the United States. We spend more money, boys and girls, we Americans, spend more money filling out our tax forms than it costs to build every automobile, every truck, every van in the entire country. Put another way, if we weren't paying this tax, if we weren't preparing all this tax, if we weren't spending all this money preparing our tax forms, we could all go out and buy a new car. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, when you're asked the question, why do we have taxation? Most people would probably respond with something along the lines of, well, the government collects taxes so that they can pay their bills. Or, taxes finance the operations of government. However, rather than going through the extremely costly exercise of collecting taxes, the process of collecting taxes is costly to the government, and the steps taken by people to minimize the amount of tax that they pay places a large burden on the overall economy. You know, the government could simply print all of the money that it needs. In fact, that's what they do. Think about it. The government this year is running a deficit of about, they're telling us it's $300 billion. It's really close to a trillion. But even if you just take the numbers they lie to us about, $300 billion or so. You know, if you have an income of $30,000 and you're only going to you're only going to make $30,000, and you say, well, I want to go out and spend $33,000, 10% more. You've got to go out and make some kind of arrangements over here, or you've got to cut back on your spending, or you've got to do something. Now, when the government wants to spend 10% more than it takes in, they just print up the bonds and sell them and go spend the money. They got the printing press, and they can do that. They not only can do it, that's what they do every single year. But wouldn't the printing of all of this new money create an inflation problem? And the answer to that is absolutely. That's why we have inflation, because the government prints up all this extra money and puts it out there to circulation. There would be more inflation, that is, monetary money supply growth. However, inflation is really just a surreptitious form of taxation. So if the government were to print all the money that it needed, then people would be taxed indirectly rather than directly. And there would potentially be a net benefit to the economy, though if all forms of direct taxation were replaced by the surreptitious tax of inflation, think of it now, no more tax. Just abolish all taxes altogether. No sales tax, no payroll taxes, no social security tax, no nothing. And all the money that government wants to spend, they just print it up and go spend it, which is what they're doing anyway. They just print it up and go spend it. Although maybe they don't print up $100 bills, you know, with Ben Franklin on the face, but they print up a bond and go sell it to somebody who in turn pays for that bond with a Benji, and then pile up some debt. And when they pile up that debt, you've got to pay interest on it. Think about that. It's also worth noting that if money printing replaced direct taxation, then the total addition to the money supply would be a lot less than the replaced tax revenue, because the government's expenses would be a lot lower. For instance, it would eliminate... It's the elimination of the huge government network that exists solely for the purpose of bringing in tax revenue, something we've already mentioned. And it's one reason why expenses would be lower. Another reason is that there would be no federal debt if the government printed money. To give you an idea of what a big difference the elimination of the federal debt would make to the government and its annual expenses, we'd like to note that the U.S. federal government paid $350 billion in interest during 2005. The 2005 fiscal year, $350 billion. And they've paid over $250 billion in interest during the current fiscal year. Now think of that. You eliminate the IRS and all of its employees. You eliminate all of the $200 billion a year that we pay in trying to get our taxes filed and formed by H&R Block and others. You eliminate $350 billion worth of interest that you're paying on the national debt every year. You eliminate all the costs of prosecuting all the people for willful failure to file and tax evasion, and all the costs of incarcerating those people in prison. That eliminates prisons and guards and all the rest of it. You know, just balance out the savings that you make with the amount that they're spending. And the government is going to spend whatever they're going to spend, whether you like it or not, aren't they? I mean, when was the last time that you wrote a letter to your senator or representative and said, hey, cut back on spending? And if you did, when was the last time your government listened to you and cut back on spending? So either, number one, you didn't write the letter because you didn't give a rat's rectum anyway, or you did write the letter because you did care, but they didn't listen to you. So you got the same net result. Government is going to spend every damn dollar that they want to spend, irrespective of what you believe, what you want, what you desire, or what you instruct. Aren't they? All right. So if we got it into our minds, off the top of our heads over here, government does not need taxes to pay its bills. And indeed, if you think the government needs taxes from you to pay the bills, you're not paying attention. The government hasn't lived within its budget or within its income for the last 70 years. They just spend whatever the hell they want to spend. They just run up whatever debt they want to run up. And it doesn't make any difference whether the interest is $350 billion a year or $30 billion a year or $3 trillion a year. They don't care. They'll just print up whatever the shortfall is. Well, if they can print up whatever the shortfall is, they could print up whatever the longfall is. They don't need any money from you at all. Mull it over a little bit. Just mull it over. Government doesn't need any money from you to finance its operations. They've got the printing press. As long as we accept paper money, they've got all the money in the world. And they've got it now, and they're spending it right now. And it costs you a lot more if you stop and think about it. When the government borrows this money, you got to pay interest on it. So you're making $10,000 a year, and the government's coming in here. They're taking half of everything you create and produce down here at the lowest level, half. As you get a little higher, say $100,000, then they're taking about 74%. The more money you pay, or the more money you make, I should say, in gross income, the less you pay as a percentage of the whole. Just think of that gallon of gasoline over there. It doesn't make any difference whether you're making $1 million a year or $10,000. The tax on that gallon of gas is a buck and a half. Now, if the government printed all of its money, then the price of the gas would be a buck and a half. And then you'd be paying the inflation tax. And the inflation tax would probably be more than it is today. But nevertheless, the bottom line is, it wouldn't be as much as you're paying today. You'd actually live better without taxation than you would with taxation. And government could finance its operations with the inflation tax instead of by the inflation tax and the direct tax. But why don't they? You know, this is a question that comes up. You know, well, why don't they do that? There's a very important reason why we have an income tax and why we have these 480 taxes, and it doesn't have anything to do with financing the cost of government. Hang on. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage also. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about taxes. You know, that brings us back to the question, well, then why do we have taxation to start with? Well, as far as we can tell, there are two interrelated reasons, the first of which can be explained with the help of the following extract from the Richard Kelly Hoskins book on War Cycles, Peace Cycles. Here's what Hoskins said. When the Crusaders first left their homelands in Europe for the Crusades to the Holy Land, they took with them almost the entire circulating supply of gold and silver coins. This left the Western nations, England in particular, with no money. So in the year 1100 AD, Henry I, the fourth son of William the Conqueror, ascended the throne of England, finding the treasury empty and his needs great. So he cast about for a source of income. Having wise advisors, he soon hit upon a plan. And the plan, with a few refinements, remained in effect for the next 726 years in England. Now, that's from 1100 AD, 726 years is 1826. That's not too far back, boys and girls. And this system could be reinstated tomorrow. What he issued was tallies, spelled T-A-L-L-I-E-S. It was called the tally system. Now, a tally was a stick about 9 inches or so long, with each of the four sides about 1/2 inch wide. On two of the sides, the value of the tally was carved into the wood. And on the other two sides, the amount was printed in ink. Kind of like making money today. You just go out and make it. You don't need gold. You don't need silver. And in this case, it worked a little better than paper because it was actually a tangible piece of wood that could be split in half lengthwise. So the tally was then split in half lengthwise. Now, 1/2 of it remained in the treasury, and the other half was given to the soldiers for their pay. Or it was given to the farmers for their wheat. Or it was paid directly by the government to the armorers for armor and to their laborers for their labor force. So if they wanted to build a road, they just paid whatever the cost was in these tallies. They just went out and printed it up. So went out and made it. They used wood instead of paper. There's no gold in the treasury. There's no silver. There's nothing. The government just goes out and makes whatever money they want to make. And then they just pay whoever it is they need to pay with these tallies. What I just mentioned, you know. Government can just print up the money that they want and go out and pay their bills. Buy whatever they want. They do it anyway. So. Then at tax time. They come up to tax time. Taxpayers were then required to bring in 1/2 of a tally to pay their taxes. So woe unto the man who did not have the required number of tally sticks. As a consequence, these intrinsically worthless sticks of wood were in great demand. Gold and silver coins were fine if you traveled abroad for a crusade or something, but at home, if you didn't have your tax tally stick at tax time, you were a goner. Now, upon receipt of a tally, the treasurer would immediately match the presented half with the half stored in the treasury, and they had to tally, which is what gave it its name, tally. It has to tally. Counterfeiters lost their heads. Actually, it was practically impossible to counterfeit a tally. You see, the wood grain had to match. The notches had to match. The numbers on the tally had to match, and the ink inscriptions had to match. Now, this could only come about if both pieces of the tally came from the same split tally stick. It eliminated counterfeiting. So there you have it. It's an inexhaustible source of revenue for the government. The means were available to make tallies as long as there were trees. There was a demand as long as the government required the tallies for taxes. and the system flourished as long as tax evaders and counterfeiters were punished, and they always were. For 726 years, the system flourished till 1826. Now, in the historical example described above, the government created strong demand for essentially worthless pieces of wood by requiring that all taxes be paid using these formerly worthless objects. Something that would otherwise have had no value, hence became very valuable. It's a similar story today in that taxes create demand for essentially worthless pieces of paper. For example, if you have a lot of gold and a large dollar-denominated tax bill, and then a very small amount of dollars with which to pay that large tax bill, then you're going to need to sell some of your gold in order to obtain the dollars, the worthless pieces of paper, that you need to pay your tax bill. Even though gold is much better suited to be money than any of today's national currencies and would be a lot more useful to the government than the paper that it churns out at almost zero cost, we don't know of any government that would accept your gold in payment of your tax bill. Taxation not only supports the currency directly due to the need to obtain the currency in order to pay the tax, but it also supports it indirectly by fostering the general belief that the currency is actually worth something. After all, if the government is prepared to accept the currency that it creates, and only the currency that it creates in payment of taxes, then the currency must have genuine value, doesn't it? Well, on the other hand, if the government were to announce that there will be no more taxation, and that all future government expenses will be paid by turning on a monetary printing press, then the light bulbs would suddenly appear above the heads of millions of Americans and people all over the world. People who previously hadn't given the nature of modern money a second thought and who hadn't stopped to consider why a piece of paper with a number 100 printed on it should be worth 100 times as much as a similar piece of paper with the number 1 printed on it would quickly come to realize that if the government can just print as much money as it wants, then the money must have no real value. And boys and girls, that realization that would lead to the question, why should I work hard for something the government can produce in unlimited amounts at no cost? So in summary, without the underlying demand created by taxation, there is a good chance that the purchasing power of today's national currencies would collapse. Taxation is therefore a critical component of the current fiat monetary system, but not for the same reasons that most people think. Now, of course, if the government did that, if they eliminated all taxes and just financed government with the printing press, it wouldn't take us long to figure out that the money is worthless and that we need to go to something else, and we would probably gravitate to gold or silver, or wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, anything that has real value, something that you can use. In jail, cigarettes are the currency of the jail. You know, a cigarette had value. I mean, you could buy a guy's banana with a cigarette. You could eat a lot better with cigarettes. I didn't even smoke, but I always had cigarettes, you know, in my commissary account. Well, I wouldn't go to jail without cigarettes. And that's because everybody in there, for the most part, smokes. And so the non-smokers use the cigarettes to buy bananas and oranges and other food staples from the other prisoners who would rather smoke than eat oranges and bananas. And the fiat money system would collapse. And so in the jails today, they simply eliminate the cigarettes, which is the money of account in the jail, by prohibiting smoking. That just destroys the whole market system in the jail. Well, paper and gold can't exist together. Bad money drives out good. Bad money, paper money, drove out gold and silver. It isn't that there isn't any gold and silver out there. 5% of Americans own 95%. No, 100%. 5% of Americans own 100% of the gold and silver in this country. 5% of the people own all of the gold and silver. 95% of you use paper. Always remember this, that gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. Boys and girls, Americans, Australians, Canadians, Europeans, New Zealanders, indeed, everybody in the world uses fiat currency, the currency of slaves, debt, to conduct their monetary transactions. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, you know, there's an old adage that goes around here in America that says that Social Security is the third rail of politics. Tuck it away in your heart. Social Security is the third rail of politics. Everybody has a Social Security number, and I suspect that most of you people in Australia and Canada and around the world, you know, you have Social Security. But why? Here in America, it's called your taxpayer identification number. Did you really want to be a taxpayer? Social Security and the income tax. Just if you're an average Joe Sixpack, carpenter, plumber, electrician, mechanic, blue-collar worker. Your Social Security and your income tax take one-third of everything that you create and produce. Those two taxes take one-third of everything that you create and produce. Isn't that just real special? Now, if you take a look at what you create and produce and how many taxes you pay, have you thought about how many taxes do you pay? 14. Now, there's 480 tax forms. You're not paying all 480 taxes, but you're paying 14 right off the top. And here's what they are. Social Security and the federal income tax. Social Security takes 15.3%, and your federal income tax takes 17%. The state comes in with a state income tax of 5%, and then your city income tax takes 1.8%. So if you're making $50,000 a year, those four taxes, your income taxes, take $19,150. $19,150. Then you pay a corporate franchise tax, 1%. Capital gains tax, 1%. Personal property tax, 1%. A real property tax of 5%. A gasoline tax of 1%, an excise tax of 2%, a license fee of 1%, and fines, 1%. Now that's a total of $26,882 on 12 taxes. Here come your two biggies, the last two. Hidden taxes, 257 of them, takes 16%, and sales tax takes 7%. Now, these are the averages nationwide. Now, think of that. 14 taxes on a $50,000 income, on average, now, take $30,000. That leaves you with 20. I mean, your government takes more than you do. The government gets paid more than you do. And you say to yourself, well, I don't have a corporation, so I don't pay a corporate franchise tax. Yeah, you do. Every one of us does, whether we like it or not. because this is the average. The average. Some people pay more than 1% on their corporate franchise tax. When you average it out, every one of us pays 1%. You say to yourself, well, I don't pay 15% on my Social Security tax. See, my employer pays half of it. No, he doesn't. Your employer doesn't pay a nickel of your Social Security tax. Not a nickel. He never has, doesn't now, and he never will. You say, well, corporations pay tax. No, they don't. No corporation in the United States of America between 1787 and, as I speak, in 2006 has ever paid 1 cent in tax. Not a penny. Corporations are not designed to pay tax. Corporations are designed to collect tax and then turn it over to the government. They're the intermediary. They're the collection point. It's where you go, it's where the government goes to pick up the money. And prior to World War II, individuals paid these taxes, but they were collected by the corporations and paid over to government. Then government came along with a little different twist on things and said, we got to control these people more directly. So we will tax them directly with the income and Social Security tax. And they've expanded those taxes, especially on the middle class, until now the government is collecting from the middle class now. And of course, the more that you make, the less percentage of the tax that you pay. Let me give you a quick illustration here. When I was running the Atlantis Company, corporation, the state raised the corporate income tax. They actually raised it 5%, but in my illustration here, I'm going to use the number 10% because it's easier for you to follow if you're driving down the road. It's hard to calculate in your mind, 10%, but it doesn't make any difference whether it's 5 or 10%. I want to show you what business does to you. I want to show you how corporations and people like George Gordon stick it to you and with no Vaseline. So pay attention. I'm a corporate businessman. I'm from the corporate world. I'm an ex-CEO. Then let me show you how we gaff you. The Atlantis Company is selling $1 million a year worth of product. That's their gross sales, and they net 10%. So that's $100,000. Can you follow that? We're out here working away, and we're producing our furniture, and we sell that furniture for $1 million. Then we net 10%, so the company makes $100,000. The state comes along and says, well, we want 28% of that. It's called capital gain tax. So they come along and they take this capital gain, or this income tax. In this case, it was an income tax, and it was $28,000, which leaves me with $72,000. So I make $72,000. State comes along and they raise that tax 10% from 28% to 38%. Most of you people out there say, good, those corporations need to pay their fair share. Makes you feel real good that the state comes along and sticks it to the corporation. Sticks it to General Motors. Sticks it to corporate America. God, it makes us feel good all over, doesn't it? Okay. So the state raises their corporate income tax by 10% from 28% to 38%. So in response to that, I raise my prices 10%. Got that? Government raises my taxes by 10%, so I come out here and I raise my prices by 10%. And you people out there can't figure that out. You've been to public school. You don't understand that. Well, that makes sense. You might grumble a bit and say, they raised their taxes 10%, and so he raised his prices 10%. So in response, I raised my price now by 10% to compensate for this added cost of doing business. Seems fair and reasonable. So now I'm selling $1,100,000. I know last year I sold $1 million, raised my prices 10%, so this year I'm going to sell $1,100,000, and I'm going to net 10% of that. So I'm going to net $110,000, or 10% of $1,100,000. Now remember that corporate tax rate is 38%, so my tax is is 38% of 110,000. Now, last year, I netted 72,000, but this year, because I've got a 10% higher tax, my tax goes up by $4,120 to $76,120. Remember that? So my after-tax net profit is $4,120 more than last year. Now, that's 5.7% more money in my pocket with a tax increase of 10%. Now, I know if you're driving down the highway over here, you're sitting there saying, well, I can't follow that because I don't have the numbers right in front of me. So let me explain to you. When the government raises taxes, they raise the tax on the net. So the government raised the tax 10% on the net profit of the company. But the corporation, George Gordon, didn't raise his prices 10% of the net. I raised my 10% of the gross. I didn't raise it 10% of 100,000. I raised it 10% of 1,000,000. Do you follow that? So, yeah, I had to pay a few bucks more in tax. Sure. But I raised my prices by 15%, and the government raised my tax by net, you know, 4,000 bucks on 100,000, about 4%. What I should have done, if I wanted to just pass the tax on to my customers, is to have raised my taxes by 0.00412%, not 10%, to just pass that tax on through to the customers. Hey, boys and girls, do you think I'm alone? Do you think the people at Ford and General Motors and Microsoft can't figure out that little ruse? Where in the hell did you think I learned that? Do you think I thunk that up? Hell, I went to public school. When I came out of public school, I couldn't count. I couldn't count until I was 37. 37 years old before I learned how to count. That's what public school will do to you. But then when I finally learned how to count, I went out into the business world and I've done quite nicely. Now, that's the way that game is played. And as we progress through, I'll explain to you how corporations stick it to you. And you not only pay the taxes that the corporations pay, but you also pay higher prices for the corporation to raise the percentage of their profitability on the goods and services that they sell. Now, that's what fiat currency does. And that's what taxation does. And let me tell you, there is nothing that a corporation loves more. There's nothing that corporate management loves more than a tax increase. God, we love it. That's because we don't pay taxes. We profit from those taxes in the same way that government profits from those taxes. And we profit off of the backs of the lowest income earners in the nation. All right, we're about out of time. I got to leave it here, so we're going to give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Here, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.